Welcome back, everybody, to episode 24 of the Guardian Project Podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and although math is for blockers, I'm still going to make you tell me how much you're swinging at me, Ruff.
Okay, you just did this on Monday, too. And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And, you know, there's a lot of similarities between Nicol Bolas and Thanksgiving. There's extensive plans, everyone gets together, there's inevitable fighting, and at the end, everything gets foiled.
Oh, it's like leftovers.
Yes.
Please listen carefully.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering. Commander.
Oh, but mostly Commander. I'm sorry. It is mostly Commander.
What do we have on the agenda today?
Today we're going to talk about since it's the Thanksgiving episode, we're going to talk about the cards that we're both thankful for that have been released in the past year.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to go over a very controversial topic in the Magic Commander community on how to build an effective mana base for EDH. And we're going to end the episode with another segment of Commander of the Week, which we started last week.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy's going to talk about one of his decks during that segment.
Sigarda, Heron's Grace. Humans.
It's
so stay tuned. So Thanksgiving. We want to talk about the cards we're thankful for that came out in the last year.
Yes.
So that was Ravnica Allegiance Forward.
Mm-hmm.
So that includes Modern Horizons. That includes Commander 2019, Commander decks, what have you.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff.
Right. So we each picked a few. We want to talk about what it is and why it is.
Mm-hmm. And I know
that we're thankful for.
And you had trouble paring this down the same way I had trouble paring my list down from the Mystery Booster segment.
But so. I did pare it down. I think I did a pretty good job. But I'll start with our first one,
mm-hmm.
which is near and dear to our podcast, from Ravnica Allegiance, Guardian Project.
It's got to be said.
I mean, we have to, right?
Yeah.
So the card came out and we said, or I said, mm-hmm. a long time ago, we were waiting for a good name for the podcast. And funny enough, the original name of the podcast was going to be named after Squee, Eternal Goblin, Squee, what was it?
Squee the Immortal?
The Immortal. Squee, okay. The Immortal. And it was going to be Squee, exclamation point, mm-hmm. the Immortal Podcast.
Oh.
And so it was a pretty good name.
Yeah, not bad.
And then we decided we hated it. We're like, you know.
Pretty good name.
Nope.
But we hate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
This was Michael Patrick Coyle.
It was pre-Michael Patrick Coyle. This was with Brian. We were trying to figure out a name. And then Guardian Project came out. And I said, wait, we can be the Guardian Project Podcast. We'll just add the article. And then it's just Guardian Project Podcast.
Yeah. It works perfect.
And so it worked out. And the best part is the card's actually good in Commander.
Yeah.
And fantastic. If you don't play it, you should play it.
The card seems like it's printed for Commander.
Yeah, it's not. I don't know if it's good in Standard. It's actually not, because if you read the card again, you'll be surprised that there's an actual line in that card, because mm-hmm. most people think it does something different than it actually does.
Okay.
So it's from Ravnica Allegiance. Mm-hmm. Obvious reasons I added this to the list. It's a great card, and other people think so as well, because it's played in 8,715 decks according to EDH Rec as of today. So that's a good amount. Not a ton. I mean, it's a ton, but it's not like in, you know, 600x.
Right.
You know. So an enchantment for 3 and a green that says whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, if it doesn't share the name of another creature you control, and this is where people forget, or the name of a creature in your graveyard, you draw a card.
I did not know that.
In Commander, you don't have to think about that because it's not going to in most cases.
Yeah, there's very niche cases.
But in Standard, it's even worse, because if you're playing, let's say, 4, 2, 3 of a card,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you don't draw if one of those cards is in your graveyard.
Yeah, that's not good.
Right. So, name of the podcast, and for that reason, it's on my list.
It's a good choice.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go with my first one. There's going to be kind of a theme on my list. Let's see if you can guess that theme. Number one on the list, my new favorite mono black commander in all of Commander. He's not a dad, but he's a son. His name is Kurik, son of Yawgmoth.
But he's not actually a son, though. That's just a name he gave himself. Did you know that?
I didn't know there was lore behind
it. It's not actually a son.
Oh,
anyway, continue.
So what you're saying is they could print another card later on that says actual son of Yawgmoth.
OG or real son of Yawgmoth.
Yawg baby, actual son of Yawgmoth.
Yes.
So Carrick, he has 806 decks built around him as the commander. He's not very popular as part of the 99. A lot of people are building decks around his abilities. So he is four black, 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 but not just black, black, black. Phyrexian black, black, black. So you can pay two life. Three times. Black, black, black. Phyrexian, Phyrexian, Phyrexian.
Oh, because his ability itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you pay two life instead of... no, it's actually just four Phyrexian, Phyrexian, Phyrexian.
You're right.
Yeah. So you can pay six life and four mana to cast him out, or you can pay black for each one of those two life.
It's so expensive.
Oh, but it only costs four mana.
But I've seen it destroy me, so I know it's good.
Oh, it's so good. He is a 2/2 with lifelink. So his ability that everyone's building around is for each black in a cost, whether that's a mana cost for a spell or an ability cost, you may pay two life rather than pay that mana. And whenever you cast a black spell, put a +1/+1 counter on Carrick, son of Yawgmoth. So he makes it so you can cast everything for a lot cheaper, but also life, which can synergize with a lot of other really good black spells. And mono black is the best color combination in Magic the Gathering. My opinion.
Yep. But very good for Commander.
Yeah. Love this card. So glad it was printed. It's in the Anji Falcon Wrath Rakdos C19 Commander Precon as one of the non-foil legendary creatures. Everything about this card is amazing.
And it gives us new play styles, because I love it when my opponents kill themselves.
Oh, yeah.
And then I can just take them out quickly, because this deck could go horribly wrong.
It can.
But it could go amazingly right.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it before where someone's like, I'll just pay the life. They go down to 10 and then they're about to gain life. And I'm just like, I'll kill you. Oh, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I don't have any responses.
Yep, that happens.
But I've also seen them go down to like 10 and then go back up to like 80.
Yep.
Real fast.
Gray Merchant. Every single one of these Phyrexian black pips counts as a black pip too.
Yeah, I had to call a judge because one time I was like, wait, this is real? And they said, yeah, unfortunately, that's how that works.
Very fortunately. Oh,
okay.
Coming to the dark side.
Yeah. My number one card that I'm thankful for the last year is also from the same set I just mentioned, Babnica Allegiance. It's an enchantment. It's white. It's ramp.
Mm-hmm.
It's Smothering Tithe.
Ugh, it's so good. Commander.
So for three and a white, it's an enchantment that says whenever an opponent draws a card, that may or may pay two generic. If they don't, you make a treasure token that has tap sack this artifact, add one mana of any color to your mana pool. So it is ramp. It's ramp in the color white that lacks ramp,
mm-hmm.
but it's really good when you're playing in Commander because people like me, and I'm not the only one, like to draw cards. So if mm-hmm. someone's drawing four or five cards either in their turn or even in the round, you know, one turn around for each player,
mm-hmm.
you are likely going to make multiple treasures. And on your turn, you have so much mana. You can do whatever it is that you want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This card is played in
any deck that runs white.
How many? Okay, if you do, you, wait. Do, have, oh, you talked about this. It's in 20,761 decks on EDH Rec. So
yeah.
Clearly, we're not alone, and everyone else is very happy about this card.
It's
as well.
So good.
It honestly, I wish I had bought like seven foils of it before it spiked, and it
mm-hmm.
spiked maybe 2 weeks after it came out.
Yeah.
It was immediate because people realized this was so good in Commander. If you're not playing that in white, you should try it out, and you'll see how fast you decide that it's one of your top white cards.
Let me give you this dream scenario of when I was playing my Nekusar Wheels deck, and someone put a Smothering Tithe out, and I proceeded to wheel. So he saw 21 Smothering Tithe triggers go on the stack on my turn.
Yep.
Yeah, he got 21 treasures. He got them all.
We're not at all paying for that.
This was a Gishath deck too, and he proceeded to pump out every single dinosaur in his hand.
Did he win?
Yeah,
I figured.
Yeah, he won. Yeah, it was pretty good.
So I wouldn't underestimate Smothering Tide, but I'm thankful for that card.
That's a wonderful card to be thankful for.
Yep.
All right. So my second card on my list just so happens to synergize so well with the first card on my list.
Is it another black card?
Of course it's another black card. Did you figure out the theme of my list yet?
I did. It's black.
Oh, it's so black. The second card on my list is Villis, Broker of Blood.
So the card that you just remove when you see it.
No, you need to do that, especially in a Kurik deck. So Villis, Broker of Blood is 5BBB. He is a legendary creature. Not many people run him as the commander just because he's an 8-drop. He's a kind of guy in a black deck you want to throw in your graveyard and reanimate for a lot cheaper than his 8 mana. So he's played in 3,214 decks, probably mostly reanimator decks. He's a flying 8-8, and he has the ability where you can pay black and pay 2 life. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. But his best ability is whenever you lose life, draw that many cards. And damage causes you to lose life. Paying, I don't know, Phyrexian black instead of his ability causes you to lose life too. So with Kurik, you pay 4 life, you draw 4 cards, target creature gets -1/-1 till end of turn.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's really good. Also, one of my favorite things to do with him is to reanimate him with the spell Reanimate, which costs...
You wouldn't say.
Because it costs 1 black, which in a Kurik deck could just cost 2 life instead of any mana. And Reanimate says, reanimate target card from your graveyard, and then pay life equal to its converted mana cost. So Villis is on the battlefield when you pay the 8 life for that spell, and you get to draw 8 cards right away.
I'm just stuck on the fact that I said you wouldn't say and not you don't say.
You don't say.
Why did I say you wouldn't say?
You're just trying to be grammatically correct.
But I don't. Is that grammatical?
It's in a very Azorius thing for you to say. Andy.
I'm sorry. Villis, I removed that just a couple of weeks ago.
You did.
And, oh, man.
And I brought Razaketh out instead.
But he made me, oh, man, I actually felt bad. He was like, oh, you removed my one good creature? And I was like, oh, man, I actually kind of feel bad. And then he played Razaketh, and I was like, I don't feel bad ever. I'm never going to feel bad for you again.
Oh, can you imagine the
you
two
did
of them?
Win the next turn.
Grey Merchant, best black card ever printed. So that is my...
That's really that you think the best card?
I like, in a mono black deck, Grey Merchant belongs.
It belongs. You think it's the best card in that whole deck? I disagree.
I think I win with that card more than any other card in the deck. I think the fetch cards to grab it might be better than him, but okay. I'm still grabbing him.
My next card?
Yes.
It's from Commander 2019.
Okay.
Blue. It is... In my opinion, an underprinted mechanic. I love it. It's sudden substitution, split second.
I hate split second so much.
So, sudden substitution for 2 and blue, instant speed. Split second, you can't respond to this. Mm-hmm. Nothing else can be put on the stack. Everything else will resolve, but you can't respond to it. Mm-hmm. It has nasty combo potential with the pack cycle.
Yes.
So, I mean... That's not the reason I like it. I didn't think about that until it was pointed out to me that you could actually do that.
Yeah. What's the card do?
So the card itself says, split second, you can exchange control of target creature for a target spell. Mm. Let me read the actual language on that card, which is
the exact
exchange control of target non-creature spell and target creature, then that spell's controller may choose new targets for it with split second. So you can take someone's non-creature spell and give them a creature, or you can cast a spell and then exchange control of that spell with someone else's creature.
Yep.
So if you just want to cast a ramp spell, you can give someone else ramp and take, you know, one of their creatures. Mm-hmm. Or the combo that I'm talking about, which is the pact cycle, which is you can pay this for free, but then you have to pay an amount at your upkeep. Mm-hmm. If you cast a card like Pact of Negation, where you have to pay mana at your upkeep, and it includes blue, if you cast that spell and then you sudden substitution, you give it to someone and you take one of their creatures, they're forced to pay that amount at their upkeep, and if they don't, they lose the game.
Right.
So if you do that with someone who's not playing blue or can't produce blue, they literally lose at their upkeep. They don't get to do anything because it's untap, upkeep, then draw. So you can respond to that trigger on the stack.
Mm-hmm. Do as much damage as possible to that person that just made you lose the game.
Or maybe counter it.
Counter the triggered ability?
On the stack.
Yeah, that's true.
But most people don't have the ability to do that. So it's a really tricksy card,
yeah,
which I really like playing tricksy cards, and a lot of people don't like playing against my decks because of that.
I just hate Split Second. That's the one part about it I hate.
It makes games interesting, and that's how I like to play.
Yeah.
Much to my friend's dismay. And honestly, I haven't been able to cast this card enough.
I haven't seen this cast at all in our pods yet.
I've cast it 2 times.
Okay.
But it's only 1 in 100. And
true.
You know, I don't have it in every deck.
Mystical Tutor for it every single game.
It's great. but I also think it's severely underplayed at 737 decks. It really is gain control of target creature.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it.
Do you think it has anything to do with the cost of the card? Because it is one of the chase cards from that particular
I don't think, right? So much anymore. It's $250.
Oh, okay.
So it's not that it shot up in price after a video came out that explained the packed combo.
Right.
But then it died off because how often is that going to happen?
I mean, you need both of them in your hand, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or if someone else, you wouldn't want to take someone else's packed. Well, you might, I guess, but in most cases you won't. But I think it's a super underplayed card, and I'm thankful that it's there because we need more Split Second.
No, we need...
Please, Wizards, print more Split Second.
If you could go back and eliminate the keyword Split Second from all cards, Wizards of the Coast, I would be very happy.
Is that what you want to eliminate, Split Second?
Of all the mechanics that Wizards has ever brought out,
there's worse.
There probably is, but I'm
not worse as in play wise. There's just ones that don't do a whole lot.
Well, sure, but I don't worry about those because they don't do a whole lot. Right?
Don't take my Split Second.
I want Split Second gone.
Okay, only if they get rid of Phyrexian mana.
All right, you can have your Split Second.
Okay.
All right, so my number 3 card, staying on theme.
Wait, this is number 2.
This is my number 3.
It is. Oh, yeah, it is your number 3, because I did 3. Guardian Project first.
You did, okay. Guardian Project first.
Yep. That's an honorary mention.
Honorary mention, Guardian Project. My number 3, not honorary mention. The card that finally, the character in Magic history that finally got a card printed in Modern Horizons next to the mono blue Urza Lord High Artificer is my boy, Yawgmoth, Thran Physician. He is a wonderful, wonderful boy.
I hard agree.
Yeah. So for 2BB, he is a legendary human cleric 2/4 that has protection from humans. A human with protection from humans, he must not like humans very much. And if you know the lore, you know that that's true.
He's the worst.
He's the best.
His lore is terrible, but I mean, he's a great card.
His abilities, his 2 abilities, his first one says, pay 1 life, sacrifice another creature. So that's the cost. Put a -1/-1 counter on up to 1 target creature and draw a card. So it's a free sac outlet where you have to pay life, but I don't know, maybe you have a card out that whenever you lose life, you draw cards. And then put a -1/-1 counter on something and draw a card. His second ability, that's right, there's more, is pay 2BB, discard a card, so that's the cost, proliferate. So that -1/-1 counter you just threw on someone? Oh, no, there's a second -1/-1 counter on them. Are you playing mono black infect? That person with infect? Oh, they got another infect counter on them. Oh, can you play 2BB, discard a card, and then reanimate it? You can, because the Yawgmoth is Yawg Daddy. I love this guy so much.
I played in Hypatra. Really good. That was one of the top staples now in that card, I feel. In that deck, I feel. Mm-hmm. I love it. I have a Hypatra deck, and it is, I think, but the problem is
coming at you.
That deck or Yawgmoth,
yes,
dies Yawgmoth instantly.
Oh, target removal number 1.
No.
He really is.
But I will say I have a fun story with Yawgmoth. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Really great. So our buddy plays a deck, Grismold the Dreadsower.
Yes.
And I was playing Hypatra. Mm-hmm. I didn't pick it out for any reason, but I realized I was probably in the seat that is going to get crushed, because Grismold says whenever a creature token dies, you put a +1/+1 counter on Grismold. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just making token snakes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I played Yawgmoth and I would sack a snake and I put a -counter on Grismold. Draw a card and Grismal gets a +1/+1 counter. So it went infinite because of their commander, mm-hmm. and I drew until I had the card I needed to win the game. That was the best interaction I've ever seen with that card.
That's pretty awesome.
I know. So I feel like that deck should play Grismal to Dread Sower now, which it's not on the top of the list, but
you might as well.
Just, you know, it's my fun story with that card.
It does go infinite with Torment of Scarabs. Three mana enchantment.
The Torment of Scarabs? It's Scarab something.
Hold on. It's probably the number one staple card on EDH Rec for this card as a commander. It's called Nest of Scarabs.
Nest of Scarabs.
2 and a black. Whenever you put one or more -1/-1 counters on a creature, create that many 1/1 black insect creature tokens.
But you have to have... There has to be a doubler, right? I don't think it goes infinite with just that. You have to have...
You have to have like a... I think you have to have 2 insects to do it.
Because you sack one, put a minus counter on something, and you make... So you have to have 2 insects, right? Yeah, yeah. You can't just have one.
Right.
You have to have at least 2.
Right. So you can...
which is not that difficult.
It's not difficult. You know, I was kind of surprised when I was looking up Yawgmoth on EDH Rec. He's only... there's only 828 decks built with him as the commander.
And how many is it in?
It's
pretty niche. I'll give you that.
Yeah, he's in... 2,447 decks.
That's still a pretty good amount.
It's a 2%. He is, if you look at it, if you're just using him as a sack outlet, and it's a really good sack outlet, but if you're only using him as a sack outlet, it's 4 mana sack outlet. So maybe that is a little bit high on your mana curve, but it's definitely, in a lot of cases, worth it. I did run him as my mono black commander for a little while. I did find that it was a little weak to have him as the commander itself. Versus a card like Kurik or a value card I run Ayara now. Ayara is my new mono black commander. I really like her. So although very good in the 99, I do see his weaknesses as a commander. Still very thankful for Mr. Yogg Daddy.
Mine is, I'm gonna change gear entirely.
Mm-hmm.
This is a brand new card. From our most recent set, Throne of Eldraine.
Ah.
And there's a lot of cards in the set that I'm thankful for. Like, this set had a lot of value in Commander.
It's fun.
Really good. But if I had to choose one based on Commander that I'm going to get the most value out of,
mm-hmm.
it's a land called Fabled Passage.
Yeah.
It's really good. So it's like your upgraded Terramorphic Expanse, upgraded mm-hmm. Evolving Wilds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a land that says tap it and sack it to search your library for a basic land, put it onto the battlefield, tapped, and shuffle your library. But then if you have 4 more lands, untap it. So you can grab a basic land. There's a lot of good basic lands that came out in Throne of Eldraine. There's a lot of basic lands that have abilities on them.
Mm-hmm.
You can grab snow basics, you can grab whatever with
mm-hmm.
this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this card is severely underplayed for being the newest fetch land, although it is $22.99 according to EDH Rec right now.
Yep.
But it's only in 1,993 decks. And if you're playing a 2 or a 3, I guess 2-color+ deck,
yep.
you're running fetches.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're playing the expensive fetches, you're playing the more cost-efficient fetches. This, I would say, is in the middle now.
Mm-hmm.
More towards the expensive fetches.
Mm-hmm.
It's more expensive than actual fetches.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Windswept Heath, I think, is less money than a Fabled Passage at this point.
Yes.
But this is likely because it's riding on Pioneer and Standard.
And Standard, yeah. And Standard, for sure.
And Standard and Brawl.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But even after this rotates, its price isn't going down that much.
Probably not that much. No. I think you're right.
So,
how do you compare this card to Prismatic Vista?
I like them both. Honestly, I think they're pretty even. I would pick Fabled Passage over Prismatic Vista only because this one costs less.
Price-wise. Yeah.
That's literally my argument here.
Okay.
But if you're playing a deck that is trying to grab basics, you want both.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the argument. I would say Prismatic Vista is just as good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
It's better. Technically, it's better.
Yeah,
You lose one life
versus, and it always comes in untapped.
It always comes in untapped versus you having to have 4 lands. But in most cases, when you play Fabled Passage, unless it's in your opener, the majority of the time it's going to come in untapped.
Yeah, and it's
I would say the majority.
It's absolutely amazing in Standard.
And you're gonna wait till turn 4, or you're gonna wait till you play your ramp spell. you know, there's going to be cases where you play it and you're going, it comes untapped. But it's important enough that you can grab the color that you need.
Absolutely.
Because you need color fixing in Commander.
Yeah.
So Fable Passage is my number three. And I'm thankful for that card being there because we needed more fetches, especially for Commander.
Need more fetches.
I mean,
just reprint the originals too, please.
I mean, they have.
Again. Do it again. Do it again. My number four card is actually not a black card.
Huh?
I know. Crazy.
Interesting.
So this card was printed in the most recent pre-constructed deck series of Brawl decks. This is a 2-mana artifact called Arcane Signet. So yeah, it costs 2. Arcane Signet. You tap it, add 1 mana of any color in your commander's color identity. This is straight up better Felwar Stone.
Yep.
So I can't believe they printed a card like this, quite honestly, because it is just a strict upgrade from a Felwar Stone, which a Felwar Stone was almost an auto include in most decks, maybe not in mono color decks, but pretty much an auto include. So this card, because of its price point, it's still a little pricey. I think it's
$10.99.
Yeah, so it's still a little expensive, but
I don't think it's going down.
I hope it does. I honestly hope they reprint it in like every single Commander precon that they're going to print next year, just to get the price down.
I mean, if you can buy the Commander Brawl decks
mm-hmm.
at MSRP, well, there's no MSRP, I guess. If you buy them at like the suggested $19.99-ish range or $20,
mm-hmm.
you've made your money because you get an Arcane Signet in all four.
Yep.
And the commander that comes in them is about $10. Like if you get Korvold, he's $20.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
If you get Alila, she's $7.
Mm-hmm.
Tulane is $4 and Sir Gwen is $2.50. So even with $2.50 plus $11.
Yeah.
You know,
you also get a Shockland and a Scryland
in
each
right.
one as well.
So no matter what, if you can get these at the $20,
mm-hmm.
you just made money.
Yeah.
Or at least no matter what, you broke even.
Yeah. Because
these are cards that you can always trade to people, but they're really good in Commander. You should play them
mm-hmm.
in Commander.
I mean, it's even good as just a straight up ramp card in a monocolor deck, Arcane Signet, where Felwar Stone maybe wasn't. Because you need Felwar Stone to tap for black in your mono black deck, and no one else on the board is playing black. Well, Arcane Signet will tap for your black.
Right. And we can go on and on with our cards we'll thank for Fuller, but I'll do one honorable mention here. Again, back to Commander 2019 for me here. Dockside Extortionist. Really good. It's a goblin for one and a red. It's a 1/2 that has, when it enters the battlefield, create X treasure tokens, where X is number of artifacts and enchantments your opponents control. Red struggles with ramp as well,
mm-hmm.
As well as white. And this is your red solution that they gave us this year.
Absolutely wonderful.
I mean, $17 is a little bit pricey,
but
if you have them, play them.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen this make like 25 treasures in a single turn before.
Oh yeah.
So that's my honorable, and I'm only picking one honorable mention. If you have a few,
I just have the one. I know you and Brian talked about him quite a lot. His name's Hogak, the Arisen Necropolis.
Okay.
And he single-handedly got me back into Modern. So that's why he is my honorable mention. Now, he got banned, and I got upset about that. But but he did get me back into Modern, and so that's kind of fun for me now.
Yeah.
That's the only honorable mention that I had.
Okay. Well, thank you, Wizards, for making these cards.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. And that's what we're thankful for. So tomorrow's Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have any cards that you're thankful for, tell us about them.
Yeah.
Anything that might be new or created, I guess, a stronger deck for you or created a new play style for you,
mm-hmm.
tweet at us. We'd like to hear from you. You want to talk about mana bases?
Oh, I don't know. This is kind of a touchy subject.
It's so hard because everybody does it differently. And when we were discussing how we did it, it's like completely opposite.
Even us two do it differently.
And it's different from everything we watched and everything we read. And we'll start this discussion by saying there is no right answer.
There isn't. So I guess we can talk about some of the videos and stuff that we watched, compiling some of the things that we talked about, our own opinions on some of these particular subjects in how to build a mana base in EDH. First and foremost, are you playing a Lands Matter deck? Because this conversation is not relevant to you.
Well, it is, but you have a bit different style because you're going to play more, and you're going to play more fetches than anyone else.
Right.
I have two of these decks with Lord Windgrace and Omnath, Locus of Rage,
mm-hmm.
and you have one with Gitrog.
I have my Gitrog deck.
So those decks are a little different. So if you're playing a Lands Matters deck, you're probably going to be playing four lands more, maybe five, maybe even more, mm-hmm. you know, whatever works for you. I think I play 41.
Yeah, I think my
Gitrog. That's way more than I would play in other decks.
My Gitrog deck is at 40. And that's way more than I normally play because I am really greedy.
He plays too few lands, in my opinion, most of his decks.
Uh-huh.
Right.
I get mana screwed lots of times.
Right.
So that was point number one, Lands Matter decks. You're going to be different than the rest of this conversation. Next, we want to talk about the base number of lands to include in your deck. It's also a highly contested opinion. If you look at a bunch of different articles and videos, they talk anywhere between like 35 and 38 lands is the base number of lands you want to talk about. Whether or not it's just you need 38 lands and that's it, or you need 36 lands and 8 pieces of ramp. It goes way back and forth on this, and I think it has a lot to do with your average CMC of your deck.
I literally always play 37 lands, and then I decide from there.
Like, yeah.
The first iteration of a deck, I play 37 or 38. And a lot of people are saying, oh, just cut one land, you can add one more spell.
But can you?
I don't know.
Can you?
You tell me, because that is your classic MO when you're building a deck. You're like, just cut one. You can cut one land. You can go down to 36. You're totally fine.
Normally,
I'm like, oh God, I don't know if you can.
Normally, I say that as a joke to people, but there are definitely instances where you can. No one can take a quick scan of your deck and say, oh yeah, you can cut a land. That's not possible. You really need to look at.
You need to lay it out by CMC.
Yeah, lay it out by CMC. See what your average CMC is. If you know how to build a standard deck or a modern deck, you know how many lands your deck wants to be at, how much mana you want to be at in order to make your deck do stuff on every single turn. If you know how to build a deck like that, you can use the same sort of ratio. That's the way I do it. I do it by ratio. So, you know, if my CMC is four, I want to make sure I have four mana out at any point. You know, I'll try to fit in, 37 lands or 35 lands and some rocks or something like that.
So the deck that I was talking about for Commander of the Week, I believe the average CMC of that deck,
mm-hmm.
I think is around 3.
That's super low.
Because I have some high spells, but I have so many like 1 and 2 CMC creatures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So for that deck, I still think I play 37.
Okay.
I personally am uncomfortable cutting it because the worst thing that can happen
mm-hmm.
is you don't play Magic because you only got 2 or 3 lands.
That's true.
And you can only play like 1 spell a turn. It's just not fun.
One,
it's miserable.
There's one thing that I do that is definitely not seen as something that you normally would do. I look at card draw as part of my mana base in that if all my deck is doing is drawing cards. So as you know, I have my Izzet card draw deck with Jorianne Ruindiver. I go pretty aggressive on the mana on that, but I also have a lot of X spells. So I also go aggressive on the number of mana rocks. But if I know I'm going to be drawing 2 or 3 cards per turn, maybe I'll throw in less lands because I only can hit 1 land drop per turn. So that's something I consider, which a lot of people don't, because, you know, there might be an instance where my Jorianne gets killed and I'm still only drawing 1 card per turn. Now I'm slowed down. So things like that can happen. But again, I'm a very greedy player.
Yeah, I still run. I think I still run 37, even with all the rocks and all the ramp spells that I play.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've just, you know, it's like. We'll touch on another format, right? So I know we're talking about Commander, but
yep.
when you're playing, let's say like Limited, right? You're playing
mm-hmm.
or Draft,
mm-hmm.
right? So Draft, mm-hmm. you want the average is 17 lands and 23 everything else.
Yep.
And you want like 14, 15 or 16 creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I cannot bring myself to be playing 18 lands or 16 creatures. I don't know what it is. I'm like, you know what? This works, you know? And I am all about taking the work that someone else has done and saying, you know what? This works.
Yeah.
And I, like we said on the podcast before, there's no shame in taking a pre-constructed set of cards and saying, I'll tweak this later. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I do is someone said 37 is the best. There's lots of articles. There's videos by Tulane Community College. There's videos by the Command Zone. There's videos by lots of folks. There's lots of articles.
Yep.
They end up saying you're good between like 37 and like 40, right?
Yep.
Most of these. And I just said, you know what? We're going to start with 37. And then I end up not changing because there's very few games when I flood.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say it happens.
Sure. It does happen.
But I think it's far less than there is that it actually happens. And I go, you know what? This just works.
Yeah. Would you rather flood or would you rather starve? I mean, you probably would rather flood because sometimes you can at least cast your commander.
Sometimes it's not bad when you're mana screwed though, because people feel bad and they don't go for you.
Also true.
But
not a strategy you should use all the time.
No, but you can. I feel like you survive better when you're screwed than you do when you're flooded.
That's true. Now there is some math to that. Those numbers of lands, using just simple statistics. If you run 35 to 38 lands, your starting hand is going to consist of 2 to 3 lands. And you will get 1 to 2 lands in your next 3 draws, which means you're naturally going to be hitting 4 lands.
Statistically speaking,
you will naturally hit 4 lands by running 35 to 38 lands. So you mix that in with some rocks, some ramp, some dorks, and you'll have consistency.
Mana dorks are creatures that tap for mana.
Yes. So
if you didn't know.
It's good to know. And not everyone will know that. That's
no,
true.
I know.
So, breaking it down,
the
best thing is consistency. And obviously you're the only one that knows how your deck works, and play testing is the number one key to finishing out your mana base.
And if you play a Rakdos deck, from my experience, you should play like 50 lands, cause you'll never have four lands on turn 4.
Nope.
I honest to God don't know what it is with Rakdos, but I've built multiple iterations of a Rakdos deck. And I just get mana screwed
every single time.
And Coyle has played every time I played it. He's like, you're stuck on 3 again? Yep.
There was
literally, yep.
So
every time.
So no one feels good getting beat by Eldrazi. But seeing the Rakdos deck finally cast an Eldrazi was like, oh, that's what this deck does.
Rakdos, Lord of Riots, to reduce CMC of damage dealt to your opponent that turn, felt really good when it finally worked. And I think it's worked like 2 times. Mm-hmm. I think I've played it like 20 times.
A lot. Your Exava deck never worked.
Exava Rakdos Blood Witch, playing +1/+1 counter deck with creatures to make them hasty. It's got like Unleash and other things. Literally never worked.
I never saw it work one time.
Not even one time. But I haven't given up on it because we tweeted earlier this week, the Fire Song and Sunspeaker deck that you built, mm-hmm, as part of a budget commander series that we're going to start producing. I want to put back together my Exava Rakdos Blood Witch deck, mm-hmm, and play that in that budget version. And then you can all see me not play Magic because I just can't get lands.
All right. So the next part of building a Magic, mana base for your Magic the Gathering EDH deck. We want to talk about the lands, different types of lands that you can build your base out of, and when to include these types of lands in what type of decks. So first up, we have fetch lands, expensive lands that don't actually tap for mana.
Or some are cheap.
Some the ones that enter in the battlefield tapped are cheap.
Yep.
Some of them still cost like $1. So depending on what your budget is. I mean, when we did our $25 budget decks, those are expensive for that budget. So fetch lands, the ones that don't enter the battlefield tapped, you pay 1 life, tap it, sacrifice it, and you go search for a land type. And it
tells you what you can grab.
Right. It doesn't say basic land type unless you're talking about Prismatic Vista and
Evolving Wilds, Terramorphic Expanse, mm-hmm, those fetches.
Like for instance, Scalding Tarn allows you to search for a mountain or an island. And this allows you to search for some dual lands, if you will, and not just OG dual lands that cost hundreds and hundreds of dollars, but like shock lands, anything that has two land types.
Shock lands, there's some cycle lands, there's some...
The check lands.
The check lands.
All have these land types in the type series, or in the type title. So you can search for those, and it helps you with mana fixing. So Scalding Tarn can fetch any of six different combinations of land types. So if you're playing a five-color deck, you should definitely, definitely, definitely consider running these fetch lands in conjunction with these dual lands in order to help your mana fixing.
Right. And if you can't afford the regular fetches, they're slow fetches. There's a full cycle that will grab them. Mm-hmm. Generally, those slow fetches come in tapped and then do the exact same thing, but they come in tapped at that point. So it's really taking an extra turn to do it.
Right.
But if you're on a budget, it 100% works.
Yeah. And if you're playing other people who aren't on a budget, you'll see some slowness. Maybe you won't have the tempo for it, but... you know, hopefully the rest of the pod is pretty even with your power level and your budget level so that you can stay on par with them if that is your limitation. There is also some expenses into some of the dual lands like the shock lands. They're much, much less expensive than your fetch lands. However, there are options like check lands.
Actually, some of the shock lands are more expensive than fetch lands at this point. I still think Windswept Teeth is cheaper than like a Watery Grave at this point.
Windswept Teeth is very cheap, and Watering Grave. Since the Shocklands are in Standard, their prices are up. When Standard rotates out, hopefully they will see a small price dip.
And then they'll shoot back up again.
And they'll shoot back up again, so buy them when the price dips. If it dips, hope it dips. We've seen
when these... it dips, you dip. We buy.
We buy. Unfortunately, we have seen some things where it's like, oh, historically, when these things rotate out of Standard, they're going to dip in price, and then they like go up. Like, the recent thing is, oh, Oko, Thief of Crowns, when he gets banned, he'll see a dip in price. And then he goes up? What happened? What? Why Oko? Did it go up in price?
It's still in Pioneer.
But it went up after getting banned in a format.
I have boxes of Throne of Eldraine that we're still going to draft. And I'm like, I really hope we open some Okos here.
Yeah.
Because there's still money now.
Borderless foil Okos.
Abs for days.
He's a shapeshifter. He's a cheater. He's a cheater at his abs. He just shapeshifts his stomach into abs. Cheater.
He's not a pumpkin eater like pumpkin pie.
Well, I mean,
that's how he keeps abs. He does both.
I mean, pumpkin's probably pretty nutritious by itself. Not a pumpkin pie. It's not a pie.
Absolutely not. No.
So the next land, since we kind of touched on the dual lands. The check lands and the cycle lands, again, are much cheaper. There isn't a full set of cycle lands. Cycle lands were printed in the Amonkhet block, or actually only in the Amonkhet set. They didn't print
the cycle,
it in Power of Devastation.
The cycle duels.
Cycle duels. Yeah, not the cycle, quote-unquote, basics. They're not actual basics, though.
No, just cycle lands. I think these are cycle duels.
Cycle duels.
Clarification.
Those are good to go for, and I actually run some of them in my Kess deck. My consultation cast deck in place of the OG duels like Tropical Island and Underground Sea. So definitely good replacements. You know, they don't come in untapped, but you can still fetch for them. The third land type I want to talk about is Rainbow Lands. And Rainbow Lands are lands that will tap for one mana of any color. So you have your Command Tower, which is printed in every single Commander precon and Brawl precon.
Is it? Oh, in the most recent.
In the recent
Commander
ones.
Commander precons.
Yeah. I guess I'm talking from the perspective of 2 years ago.
Commander 2019? It wasn't in
those. Commander.
Was it in 2019?
Yeah, Commander Tower. Yeah, Command Tower is in all of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't realize it was also in those.
I could be mistaken. If I'm wrong, tweet at me and tell me I'm wrong.
Well, I'm going to tell you you're wrong right now while you continue.
Some of the other ones, Rainbow Lands. Like Mana Confluence and City of Brass, you do have to pay one life in order to tap them for mana.
It was at least in one of them.
Okay.
It doesn't say it's in all, but it was a reprint in Commander 2019.
Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, the Rainbow Lands that produce one of any mana, the ones that pain, City of Brass, Mana Confluence. There's also some lands where you have to pay a generic mana when they enter the battlefield and they enter tapped. Those are
Transguild Promenade and the like.
They've printed quite a few of them. They are slow, but they are rainbow. So if you're, you know, 4 or 5 color on a budget, or maybe 3 color, if you really need the color fixing, if you have a lot of color pips, And we'll cover pips in a little bit. And all of your mana costs, you may want to consider running lands like that. The next land type is basic lands. You know, they're like the plains, the mountains, the islands.
The swamps and the forests. Oh, yeah,
swamps and forests. Those ones too.
But you said islands, though, so at least I was included right away.
Islands are the most expensive lands.
Are they the most expensive basic?
When you're talking about like what the basics that people buy, like the alpha basics and beta basics and stuff, yeah, islands are the most expensive.
The unbasics?
Islands are the most expensive. All the full arts from BFZ, islands are the most expensive.
Are they?
I think there might be a mountain that's actually.
So I have a draft pack there. And I put all unbasics in that. So if you're asking what a draft pack is, it's just a bunch. I have 17 sleeved of each of the basics. So I can make any combination, and it saves me time when drafting.
Yep. And then you flex on people by putting your uns out there.
You know, you get lots of compliments, though. It feels pretty good. Like, wow, I love those lands. Thank you so much. I love them, too.
And then you smack them, and you counter their spell and smack their face. So important for basics, you know, there's going to be some people out there that play cards like Back to Basics. You want to, even in a 5-color deck, include one of every color.
I've gotten wrecked by this too many times.
At least one of every color, at the least. A lot of people say two of every color and then three in like three of the colors that you're most prominent in. If you're running like a 5-color mana base, obviously you're going to be running a ton of basics in a monocolor deck or a 2-color deck. And the last land type is utility lands. And utility lands are lands that don't necessarily tap for mana. They might do other things. Reliquary Tower, it does tap for a colorless, but it also gives you no maximum hand size. It's important to put cards in this category like Nykthos, Shrine to Nyx, which can produce for color, but can only produce color in the amount of pips that you have of one particular color, so your devotion.
Well, it can produce one colorless,
It could also produce one colorless, but it's important to put it in utility lands because it doesn't inherently have the ability to produce color by itself. So Make sure you when you're considering how many colors of one particular type that you're putting in your mana base, you consider these as utility lands, not color lands.
And these are the ones that everyone wants to put in more than you need of them, yes, or more than you can actually afford of them.
Definitely.
And I run one. You know, it's a really good one. Everybody loves it. It's Glacial Chasm. Everyone hates this card.
Yeah, they sure do.
But it doesn't even produce mana. It actually actively makes me lose 2 life at my upkeep. Mm-hmm. It's cumulative upkeep, lose 2 life for each counter on it.
Right, you just so
it's
can't.
It's 2, then 4, then 6.
You just can't take damage.
Just can't take. So it says when it enters the battlefield, also sacrifice a land, mm-hmm, and then creatures you control can attack. Where's the upside? It's the last sentence here. Prevent all damage that we dealt to you.
Yeah, it seems pretty good.
That is pretty good, right? So when we play against creature decks, you're like, get wrecked. Yeah. Hopefully you have, and there's usually ways to sack your land and then bring it back so you don't have to pay the upkeep every single time.
Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't even produce mana.
Right.
There's a bunch that don't do anything for you.
And they just have really good abilities.
And everyone wants to add like 10 of these. I'm just like, if you're playing more than 2 colors, you can't have 10.
Yeah, so the least number of colors you're playing, the more utility lands you can play in.
And in monocolored, feel free to play like 15 of them.
But still be careful, because if you're playing mono black Ayara and she costs black, 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 and you only have 2 black sources on turn 3, you still can't cast your commander. Happens to me a lot.
And this is one of those situational cases.
Very situational.
That we're talking about.
So
utility lands, love them.
They're very good. So the final point for building a commander deck is how to weight your colors. So I know there's a lot of different ways you can do this. There's not a correct way to do this. However, the way I do it is I count the number of pips. And pips are your color mana and your mana costs of all of your spells. So what I do is I count all my pips. So in my Fire Song and Sunspeaker deck, I counted all my red pips and all my white pips. And I converted them into a ratio. And with that ratio, I was able to determine what my ratio for my mana base should be. And that was I had 51 red pips and 36 white pips. So I decided I needed a red-white ratio between 17 and 13 and 18 and 12. And that's not counting my dual lands. My dual lands that covered every single color, I don't count into my mana base.
This is so much math.
It's a lot of statistics. It's a lot of math. It's supposed to make things consistent. And then you end up playtesting the deck and go, wow, you don't know how many times I had a triple white pip and I didn't have enough white mana to cast this thing. So you definitely also, playtesting is going to be your number one thing. So, Andy, you don't do this.
No. So I count the number of cards that I have in each color,
mm-hmm.
and I determine the ratio compared to the compared. I compare the ratio of each color to the number of cards in the deck, and then I decide that I have to fit that many colors into 37 lands. So, if I'm playing a two color deck and I've got of the creatures or the spells period that mm-hmm. are in colors, mm-hmm. if I've got, you know, I don't know, 30% of them are white and, you know, 40% are blue, mm-hmm. I'm going to have my 37 lands split, and I'm going to make sure that I have 30% of my lands or more can produce white, and then the rest produce blue.
Okay.
And then I add every single duel that I can possibly have in those colors, which is not always the correct answer.
Right.
It's the easy answer.
It is.
But that's how I do it. And I don't play very many utility lands.
Right.
Compared to others.
How do you count cards that are like in a two color deck that are both colors? Do you count them both?
I count them both.
Okay.
Yep. Yep. So if I have like my commander, Lavinia's Race Renegade, she's mm-hmm. white and blue. She counts as a white and a blue.
Do you count?
I count her twice, which is probably not the right answer because I do. That's what I'm doing.
Sure. Do you count abilities as no, part of your mana base?
Not at all. I don't even look at them.
See, I do that as well. I will count abilities. So if an ability costs red, white, in there, I'll count that as a red pip and that as a white pip.
But you don't care about it until that creature's out.
It's
or
true.
Or whatever it is out.
It's true, but I want to make sure I can do it when he's out, which in that one out of 99, who knows?
I completely understand. I get it. But I don't do that. And I could be wrong. Tell me if I'm wrong. Tell us what you do. Because
yeah.
that's not how I do it. And we were talking at the game shop a couple of weeks ago. I was looking at I had a green-black deck, mm-hmm. Jerad, Golgari Lichlord.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like an even split. Because what we did was we counted the number of green cards and the number of black cards.
Yep.
It was exactly even.
Yep.
So I had the same number of basics, and then I had the same, and then I filled out the rest with dual colored lands, and then I think I have like three or four utility lands in there.
Right.
But it was even, so that's an easy deck to build because mm-hmm. the commander is green, green, black, black.
Right.
It's, you know, it's two and two. But I don't have many triple cost spells in there. But even if I did, I don't know if I would weigh it differently. I know that a judge at our local game shop, if mm-hmm. he sees three pips, he counts it as two for that one individual color.
Okay.
So if you have a Sakura Tribelder, which is one green,
mm-hmm.
that's one, you know, that counts towards one for us. But if you have a card that costs green, green, green,
mm-hmm.
I'm blanking. Give me a card that has green, green, green in it.
Craterhoof?
Nope.
Craterhoof,
I think
it's only two
not.
Green.
You're right.
Steel Leaf Kin. Steel Leaf.
Oh, yeah, that 5/4 thing?
Yeah, 5/4 for green, green, green.
Yeah, they would count that. He would count that as two pips.
Okay.
And he goes, well, this, you definitely need to include another. I was like, man, everybody does this different.
Everyone does it different. You need to play test your decks.
Yeah, you pretty much need to play and go, yeah, I didn't get nearly enough blue or
right.
nearly enough green,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it is that you're playing. And then just take one island out and stick a forest in and then try it again.
Yeah.
It's the best you could do.
Take one out, shake it all about,
and
see how your deck turns out.
That's
I just
what
rhymed
it's all
out
about.
Without. It is what it's all about.
You rhymed so, out without.
I rhymed out without.
One time I rhymed blue with blue and I was embarrassed.
Yeah. Well,
it was like the roses
life.
Are
I'm
red, violets are blue. Like rhyme. It was a
yeah.
stupid Valentine's poem and
yeah.
I rhymed blue with blue. It's on my Twitter timeline from probably like 3 years ago.
You didn't like delete. You didn't like purge.
No, I didn't
Twitter
delete
timeline.
It. No, I didn't delete it. It's out there somewhere. Go find it and embarrass me. It's cool.
Perfect. All right, so that's all we had for mana bases. Hopefully we gave you some good insight on how to build an EDH mana base. If you have other ideas and other ways to do it, please tweet at us and give us some of your ideas.
Do you play 37 and 40 between 37 and 40 lands, or do you also just say, "Yeah, I can take one out. It's totally fine.
Just take one out."
And how many racks do you play?
Yeah.
That's a good question, cuz I don't know if I'm not even across the board at all.
No.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not. It's totally dependent on whatever commander I'm playing.
Yeah, I agree.
And in my five color deck, I don't even know if I run rocks at all, in all honesty, because
other than the one you can cast for Wooburg.
With Sunburst. There's a rock that has Sunburst and it costs two colorless, but if you pay Wooburg with Joda, it comes with five Sunburst counters on it.
Yep.
I'm blanking on the name of that as well right again, now. So
we just talked about this the other day. We're blanking on it again.
It's prismatic.
Prismatic
X. There's like a word, and it comes in the. It's like a standard for that deck, and it's really not the most effective use of your mana for that deck. But it just, it sets you up for the next turn at least, I guess.
It does. So
you have the 5 mana. On that and the 5 mana on in your actual mana base that you can use to cast two spells on that next turn. And I'm searching for it right now, but I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, because all the lenses come up, which isn't the card, and Vista comes up, which isn't the card.
If I just search the word prismatic, will it?
No, that's what I did, and that's what we're getting, all these cards that aren't the card that are coming up that also have prismatic in the title.
But I think if we just search by Sunburst, if you search by Sunburst, you will find the card. It's Pentad Prism. So we were completely wrong.
Wow.
Pentad Prism, Sunburst. Remove a charge counter from Pentad Prism. Add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. So you can pay two different colors and you get 2 charge counters on it. But if you pay Wooburg, you're technically paying 5 colors into it because it's an alternate casting cost.
Mm-hmm.
And you get 5 counters. It's pretty cool.
So
yeah, tell us what you think.
Definitely.
And
playtest. Playtest, playtest,
playtest.
That's
really that. So 37 to 40, right? 30, what are we saying?
35 to 38 is what I have. If you want to say 35 to 40.
I'm going to say 37, just straight 37. That's me.
37 every single time, no matter what.
Every single time, unless it's a landfall deck, and then it's like 40.
Yeah.
37 every time it works.
Start there. See how it goes.
100% of the time, it always generally works.
100% of the time, it works most of the time.
100% of the time, it works most of the time. That brings us to our last segment, Commander of the Week.
Commander of the Week. So, Andy, you brought us a commander that you wanted to discuss.
I did. So, last week, you did Morophon.
Yes.
Legendary everything.
Yes.
And this week, we're going to do Sigarda Heron's Grace, Human Tribal.
Humans with an angel commander?
Humans with an angel? So, Sigarda Heron's Grace, if you aren't aware, is an angel. For 3 colorless, green and a white, for a 4/5 flyer that says you and humans you control have hexproof, and pay 2 generic, exile a card from your graveyard to make a 1/1 white human soldier creature token.
I always forget about that last ability. Always, always, always.
I don't, because that's really important.
Is it only? I'm sorry, did you say it was only from your graveyard or from any graveyard?
My graveyard.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it would have been way better if it could be any
graveyard. Stay away from my graveyard.
I think she would be played more if it could be any graveyard. But... yeah. Probably one of the most fair decks that I have. I say fair because the way I built it requires me to swing through combat to actually win.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any game-winning combos built in, but I have cards that can help me get to winning.
Mm-hmm.
So the overall strategy is to play humans and then just turn them sideways. And I play a lot of value humans that act as an anthem. So an anthem is an effect that grants a bonus to power and toughness
mm-hmm.
to all of your creatures. So cards like Mayor of Avabrook that gives your humans +1/+1.
Mm-hmm.
Benelish Marshall, mm-hmm. other creatures you control get +1/+1. Angel of Jubilation, other white creatures you control get +1/+1.
Mm-hmm.
Crusade, you know, and there's a lot more. Right. So the goal is to try to outpace and outsize my opponent's creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And I run some tutors, though, in the form of creatures. I don't run like the tutors that you think of, like a demonic tutor or
right.
a vampiric tutor, because
right.
white doesn't have that.
Right.
It has things like idyllic tutor, but it doesn't help me because I'm right. not really looking for anything in particular.
What about worldly tutor?
I run worldly tutor.
Okay.
So
okay.
I do run worldly tutor so I can search for a creature and put it on top of my library.
Okay.
But I run Ranger Captain of Eos
mm-hmm.
and Recruiter of the Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really great because they can grab creatures with specific power and toughness requirements. So they can help me grab other value creatures to either get out of a sticky situation or to try to end the game. One in particular is grabbing the card Mirror Entity.
Mm-hmm.
Fairly recent add.
Yeah.
Because I realized I would have won the game that I was playing had I just had this creature. I didn't realize I honestly thought I had it in the deck.
Right.
So Mirror Entity, two and a white for a shapeshifter changeling. So it's every creature type. So it
okay.
still receives your human benefits.
Still a human.
But it has pay X until end of turn. Creatures you control have base power and toughness X, and gain all creature types. So they even if it's not a human, it becomes a human.
Yeah.
But if you have like 8 mana open, your creatures all become 8/8 base.
Right.
And then if you have anthems, those still happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a ton of humans out, all you have to do is pump them and you just win. Yeah. But I didn't have this, so I didn't win.
Right.
So, good card to tutor for. But you can also tutor for cards that are a little combo-y. So if you want tutor, if you want to combo in green and white, the only combo that I really have is Safi Eric's Daughter along with Angel of Glory's Rise. So Safi Eric's Daughter is a 2/2 human for a green and white that says sacrifice Safi Eric's Daughter. When target creature is put into your graveyard from play this turn, return that card to play. So Angel of Glory's Rise is an angel that says when this enters the battlefield, return all humans from your graveyard to play. Mm-hmm. So if Angel of Glory's Rise is out and dies, you can sacrifice Safi Eric's Daughter, which returns Angel, which returns Safi.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as you have both of them, you're generally okay. There's a lot of combos with Safi, but not human combos. There's cards like Sun Titan, Revelark. They're not humans, so I'm not
right.
playing them.
Right.
But those of you who play with Safi probably already know that. In the way of lands, though, not a whole lot special there, but we just got a card, Castle Ardenvale from mm-hmm. Throne of Eldraine. Mm-hmm. It either taps for white or pay 2 white and tap it to make a 1/1 human.
Seems so good.
Get those creatures out there. Auto include for sure. Other new card. The other new card that haven't been able to find yet when playing, but I expect to be really good, is Charming Prince.
Yeah.
So it's a modal creature. Like the modal spells, when it enters, you pick or mm-hmm. check off one of the modes that it's going to use.
Like a charm?
Like a charm. Charming Prince.
Oh, how right? clever.
So he has, you choose one of these, you can either scry 2, you can gain 3 life, or exile another target creature you own, return it to the battlefield under your control at the beginning of your next end step. So I do have a lot of value humans, like I mentioned, that have enter the battlefield abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Things like Fiend Hunter to exile a creature, Thalia's Lieutenant, which puts +1/+1 counter on all my humans, Eternal Witness to return a card from my graveyard, or one of my favorites, Riders of Gavinny, which is a creature that has, when it enters the battlefield, choose a creature type, protection. Your humans you control gain protection from that creature type.
Mm.
So you can choose it to hopefully swing for the win against someone who's either playing a tribal deck or just has like one pesky creature you can't get through.
Right.
It's like, well, you can't block me now.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you can bounce that creature a Charming Prince, or in another way, you can just reset Riders of Gavinny.
Yeah.
And then in the spirit, we wanted to pick a few cards that we play that are unique to perhaps our build and not everyone else's. I play Repeal the Abominable. It's basically a fog that prevents all damage from creatures, but it's unique because it prevents all damage that we dealt by non-human sources.
Oh, nice.
So it's not even just creatures. If someone's playing an X burn spell that's going to deal 20 to me, mm-hmm. I can play this because it's a non-human source. It's prevented entirely. I can block to gain value from my creatures by taking out their problematic creatures, mm-hmm. or it mm-hmm. prevents me from having my creatures die to bad blocks.
Yeah.
And then the other unique card I think that I play that isn't played in most of these is Ajani the Greathearted. This is the new Ajani from War of the Spark.
Okay.
Yeah. He not only gives your creatures vigilance, which is really invaluable in creature decks that need to swing and block, yeah, so you don't lose. Well. His -2 puts +1/+1 counters on all your creatures, which is essentially exactly what the deck's trying to do.
Yeah.
So that, along with just the basic ramp package, Cultivate, Kodama's Reach.
Good green stuff.
Yeah, good green stuff. I have a Smothering Tithe, you know. Thank you. Thankful for that card.
Great ramp.
Helps out because Sigarda is a mana sink. If you have 2 colorless mana, you can exile cards that are in your graveyard to make more humans. It really makes this deck the engine work.
Yeah.
So that is our Commander of the Week. Let us know what you think. And if you have a Sigarda Heron's Grace deck, or there's cards that you think should go in my Sigarda Heron's Grace deck, let me know. We'll post a link to that deck after the episode on Twitter.
Awesome.
And that is the end of this week's episode.
Yeah. That
was fun. I think so. So we want to thank you for listening. And if you would like to contact us, you can find us on Twitter at Guardian Pod. You can also find me at AT Flory.
And me at Squeaky Pig.
And take a look for hashtag Guardian Project Pod to find our posts and episodes. We like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over those on the next episode. You can also email us at guardianprojectpod@gmail.com. We want to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
If you're celebrating it.
Eat some turkey. Gobble, gobble.
That's the only thing that I don't eat at Thanksgiving.
Is turkey?
It's gross. That and cranberry sauce. Ugh.
I like
you know what the best thing is at Thanksgiving?
Pumpkin pie.
No, very controversial, and you'll probably hard disagree.
Green bean casserole.
It's so
you're so weird.
Good.
You're so weird.
It is the best thing.
Oh my gosh!
I only eat that and mashed potatoes. I'm like a you know, pick one, pack one, green bean casserole, and like pick one, pick two, pack one, mashed potatoes, or pack two, pick one, mashed potatoes.
So it's like meat and potatoes, but you replace meat with green bean casserole.
It's so good. Those onion chips.
Oh my God.
Cream and mushroom soup.
I don't agree at all.
It's so good. Skip the turkey entirely. I don't like stuffing. Mm-mm. I don't like stuffing.
I love stuffing.
Do you guys have
it's just bread?
Like
it's delicious.
Do you have like the cranberries in like the can or like real cranberry sauce that someone makes?
I think it's just from the can.
The gelatinous crap.
Well, I mean, it's more like Jell-O.
It's like Jell-O. Jell-O's the worst.
I like Jell-O. What's wrong with Jell-O?
I'll eat rolls. Jell-O, it's a texture
rolls
thing.
Rolls give you rolls, and I don't mind.
I like rolls with butter.
Butter. Butter my rolls.
But I don't know what else. Is there anything else that I'm missing?
Oh, like candied yams?
I've never had that. Like we don't make that at our family. I've never had it.
Stuff. It's good. I think it's good.
Do you have that marshmallow fluff crap?
I don't. They don't put fluff. We put marshmallows on top of our
candy.
Well,
don't you just call it marshmallow fluff? No. It's like the dessert that's got like cherries and like marshmallow and like those like mandarin orange slices. It's like really nasty, but like a lot of people love it.
I actually don't know what you're talking.
You don't even
about
know what I'm talking about.
I don't know.
Maybe it's one of those weird family things. But like my family and my husband's family, but they're both my family. But
yeah, uh-huh.
Growing up, like yep. We both had the same desserts.
Mm.
Pretzel Jell-O?
Ugh. Pretzel Jell-O?
Have you heard of pretzel Jell-O?
No.
Me either until I started going to another Thanksgiving. It's like a pressed layer of pretzels and like sugar and stuff in the bottom of a pan and like a cream cheese layer over it and then a thin layer of Jell-O. What?
That's got to be the weirdest thing I've ever heard in my life.
I mean, it is like devoured.
Pretzel Jell-O. It's not even salty. It's sweet.
It's both.
Salty and sweet.
Isn't that like what Sour Patch Kids? No, they're sour, then they're sweet.
Sour, then they're sweet. And then they like cut your hair off or they like murder your family like, or something.
In a tree. No, those are the, I guess it's pretty standard. You got pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie. Yeah, you got the Can't apple. Go wrong with pumpkin pie.
Apple pie. I like apple pie too, though.
Sure. I like apple pie. I don't know if it's.
We also have lemon meringue pie, though, at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's good. I just like bread. I like bread and turkey and gravy and potatoes.
I don't put gravy on anything.
Oh, gravy belongs on everything. Pour my gravy boat down my throat.
Nothing. And with that, enjoy your Thanksgiving.
Gobble, gobble.
Goodbye.
Well done.
Is that enough B-roll for you at the end there?
No. No, it's fully included.
That's A-roll stuff right there.
A-roll. Honor roll.
Okay, so should we call this episode When It Dips, You Dip, We Buy?
When it dips, we dip.